Blog Talk Radio.
Make a
have the children of the world, we must start to giving. Tonight has become on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Movement Night. We want to talk about some of the stuff that's going on across the country and across the world. Dr. King said it, still to Dr. King Movement, I'm praying for you and Mary Hawkins, all is well. Dr. Christian, I'm glad to have you in Chicago. I'm glad to have you all the way from Las Vegas, Dr. Cook. One of the things tonight, to talk about the Dr. King Movement. What was Dr. King's movement? The question you might ask, what was King's movement? Dr. King's movement was to bring people out of poverty and bring people back to sanity. Now, what we're dealing with racism, white supremacy, and hate. We're dealing with a people that were handcuffed and lied to and brought to America. And after they got them here, they said, you is like a horse or donkey. You're not a full citizen. So we didn't have nobody to heal us. We had to heal ourselves. We had to make our minds that we were better than what the white man said we were. We have to make our minds that we can be successful parents. We can be successful doctors, lawyers. We can be successful if we stand together. But it's very important when we come out of poverty and they said they ain't gonna win. But we won. It reminds me of a guy who had 5 dogs. He said, Bishop, I'm going to give you this dog. This one's sick. You ain't going to make it. The one that he gave me outlived all the rest of them. Because I gave him milk and honey. He kept feeding me. He kept feeding the biggest of all the little other dogs. So when man puts you down, God picks you up. So tonight, we're looking at where we go from here, what we need to do as men and women. I'm praying for your healing, that's number one. I'm praying for your healing physically, mentally, and spiritually. Mentally, we got a lot of young folks that all messed up. When 10 people get shot in Chicago, and these are from 12, 13 up to 16. Same thing happened in Indianapolis, Indiana. Same thing happened in St. Paul, Minnesota. So we got a problem with our youth. 12 and 1 o'clock. What are you doing? Should be at home getting ready for school. But the parent is not responsible. And when the government did this, Mary, the government, you can't work on kids. Kids come to cuss you out and say anything. My grandmother that was taking care of her kid. And the kid said, you can't with me. And the kid called the police. When the police came, you know what she told the police? If I can't catch out, you can't shoot. But we can't do that. Well, I can chastise. You know what I'm saying? Then he got to the judge. The judge said, well, you're not supposed to be whooping the kid. And she said, well, judge, I'm going to leave him here with you. Because if he in my house, eating my bread, I'm going to whoop him. He going to mind. And I think that's very important that we understand where we at. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about the system that was corrupt, dealing with a system that's corrupt. He talked about the the conquerors gave money to Europeans that came to America who wouldn't give black no money, build no houses, give black no money. You know, this is kind of racial thing that's going on, and God is still whooping them for how they have treated our ancestors. I was telling one guy, I said, we don't want no reparation. We don't need that. You need reparation. What I'm saying, if your parents worked in the cotton patch in the sugar cane field in Louisiana, or worked in the tobacco shop in Virginia, and they made all kind of money for the South, but the South didn't get none of it back. They gave whipping and lynching and murder. This is what we went through. Don't hide that. Don't hide your anger. Take your anger and make it positive. You know, they said, black folks cuss, yeah, they can't really curse. But some words they said to let you know they've been going through a lot of things. This is April 1st. I want you to read Psalms, east, west, north, and south. I want you to set a glass of water up beside your bed, and I'll tell you what to do with it. On the 8th of this month, we have the at the 8th of this month, we have where you're going to see the eclipse. And the eclipse is supposed to bring cleansing and bring all evil out. So it's important for you to understand what the eclipse means in the spirit realm. You know what the eclipse means personally to you and me as a nation. And you need to have that to know that happened. Okay? That's important.
I see trees of green. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shut down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to a group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons. Part because just because he is. And because he's a real Christian, and he really believes in nonviolence. He's arrived at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, going out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote portraits, sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life. This onward push to the end of self-fulfillment is the end of a person's life. Now, don't stop here, though. You know, a lot of people get no further in life than the length. They develop their inner powers. They do their jobs well. Do you know they try to live as if nobody else lives in the world but themselves? And they use everybody as mere tools to get to where they are going. They don't love anybody but themselves. And the only kind of love that they really have for other people is utilitarian love. You know, they just love people that they can use. A lot of people never get beyond the first dimension of life. They use other people as mere steps to which or by which they can climb to their goals and their ambitions. These people don't work out well in life. They may go for a while. They may think they're making it all right. But there is a law. They call it the law of gravitation in the physical universe. And it works. It's final. It's inexorable. Whatever goes up can come down. You shall reap what you sow. God has structured this universe that way. And he who goes through life not concerned about others will be a subject victim of this law. So I move on and say that it is necessary to add breath to length. Now, the breath of life is the outward concern for the welfare of others, as I said. And a man has not begun to live until he can rise above the narrow confines of his own individual concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity.